This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This from CitizenLink. On Friday, October 18th, the Kansas Supreme Court suspended the law license of Phil Klein. The former Kansas Attorney General had investigated the nation's largest abortion seller and then faced backlash from political enemies. A district judge in 2007 reviewed Klein's evidence and found probable cause to believe Planned Parenthood committed 107 criminal acts, such as falsifying records to cover up illegal late-term abortions. Klein filed suit against the abortion seller the next day. The investigation and prosecution contributed to Planned Parenthood being defunded by some states and local governments. Pro-abortion politicians and media outlets attacked Klein for his actions. Last year, a panel of the Kansas Disciplinary Administrator claimed that Klein breached the rules of professional conduct in 10 instances. According to Dana Cody, executive director of Life Legal Defense Foundation, quote, "This case had nothing to do with the fair application of the rules of professional conduct and everything to do with being politically correct on the issue of abortion. The person responsible for initiating the campaign of harassment against Mr. Klein is now in our nation's capital as the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Shame on this court and shame on Kathleen Sebelius." Close quote.
A record 44 abortion clinics have closed this year. That is good news indeed. I'm Amanda Banks, and today I'm pleased to have with us Cheryl Solinger. She's the Senior Policy Advisor for Operation Rescue. Cheryl's been on our program before, and we're so glad to have you back today. Cheryl, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I love to bring good news to our listeners, and that's something we don't always get to do on this program. So today, I just want to talk about why the good news, basically. There was news reports recently that 44 abortion clinics have closed in this recent year, and that is a record number, correct?
That is correct, yes. Abortion clinics are closing at an ever-increasing rate. Last year, we were happy to track 24 abortion clinics that closed, and we thought that was a pretty good number, but this year has far exceeded that.
Wow.
by about twice. Yeah, twice
so,
the number.
So is that calendar year 2013?
Yes, just up until October.
Okay.
Is that number. I believe actually there's been one more. I think the number is at 45 now.
Well, that is wonderful, especially when you look at just what you said for last year being 24, which I agree with you. That's good as well. So these abortion clinics are closing. They're closing at an increasing rate. So why is this happening? I know there's several reasons. Let's just go through those. The first one that you talk about is because of declining abortion rates. How much is abortion declining?
Well, abortion is going down about an average, I would say, of about 3%. Every year in almost every state. Now, some, their declining rate is a little bit higher and some slightly lower, but it's around a 3% drop is what we expect every year. And this has been going on for about 20 years, actually. The abortion rate has been steadily dropping. And so that means there are fewer people out there seeking abortions. And so there's less business for all of these abortion clinics. So some abortion clinics have gone out of business because of financial difficulties, because they just simply didn't have enough business to stay open.
Right. Well, that's very good for sure. And the second reason that you mentioned is increased pro-life sentiment. What do you mean by that, Cheryl? Where's that coming from?
Well, you know, polls show that the people who identify themselves as pro-life has increased over the last few years. And depending on when the poll was taken, we're right at about between 49, 51, 52% of the American people identify themselves as being pro-life, compared to, I think the numbers were down around 20, 25% several years ago. So what we're seeing is more Americans are embracing a pro-life position. And part of the reason for that is because young people who are now adults, this newest generation is among the first who actually saw themselves in an ultrasound image while they were still inside their mother's womb. And so they can really identify with the baby in the womb because they've seen pictures of themselves at that stage. And what we're seeing is most of the younger people today tend to be more pro-life than, say, even 10 years ago.
Hmm. That's very interesting. I've never made that connection about the ultrasounds, but that makes a lot of sense. So that is very encouraging. I'm rather young myself. I like to think so anyway, that it is a younger generation that's bringing more of a pro-life sentiment to the adult population as a whole. That's very encouraging. Another reason that you state for the reason abortion clinics are closing at higher rates is new state laws. So what kind of things, Cheryl, do you see are making the most impact in states?
Well, in states, what we're seeing right now is a trend toward greater abortion clinic accountability. And so we're seeing many states passing new clinic regulations or licensing laws that require abortion clinics to become licensed and to meet certain minimum safety requirements. This is something that is adamantly opposed by the abortion industry because for all these years, they've remained primarily unaccountable. In some states, there's not even an oversight agency that's responsible for inspecting abortion clinics. And so they've kind of liked being left alone to their own devices all these years. That means they can cut corners on women's health. They don't have to maybe clean as well as they should, and they can run a cheaper operation and make greater profits. Mm. But unfortunately, what that does is it subjects women to conditions that you wouldn't subject an animal to in a lot of cases. And so even though the abortion clinics are fighting it, the clinic regulations are really helping to actually close abortion clinics that can't or won't clean up.
Well, that's good news on many fronts. If you're just joining us, I'm Amanda Banks, and I'm speaking to Cheryl Sullinger. She's Senior Policy Advisor for Operation Rescue, and we're talking about the good news today of abortion clinics around the country closing at a higher rate more than ever right now. In 2013, 44 or possibly 45, as Cheryl just said, have closed already this year. And so we're talking about why that is. There's many reasons. Another one is increased enforcement of existing laws. So, Cheryl, who deserves credit for this? Why are laws being adhered to more now than before?
Well, there's a couple of things that have happened in the last few years. One is that pro-life groups such as ours at Operation Rescue, we've been filing a lot of complaints against abortionists, and we've been kind of raising a stink whenever something goes wrong at an abortion clinic, an ambulance comes, or, you know, a woman comes to us that's had medical complication from an abortion. You know, we file complaints and we're bringing it, pro-lifers across the country. We're not the only ones. We do it quite a bit, but we know that there are others filing complaints too. And this has helped increase awareness in oversight agencies of the problems that exist in the abortion clinic. But one of the interesting things that has happened in the last year or so has been the case of Pennsylvania abortionist Kermit Gosnell. Kermit Gosnell ran a seedy little abortion clinic on the west side of Philadelphia in a predominantly urban area and serviced women of color. And in that abortion clinic, there were the most horrific conditions, and it all came out in gory detail during his recent trial, his murder trial, because he was actually convicted of 3 counts of murder for killing babies who were born alive during abortions at his abortion clinic. He would intentionally kill them after they were born, and these babies would be breathing, moving, and struggling for life at that time. And so the publicity surrounding the Kermit Gosnell case, although it wasn't a fraction of what that case merited, still was able to raise awareness of a lot of boards about what's going on in abortion clinics. And since then, we've been able to expose another abortionist down in Texas who was operating pretty much the same way. We had 3 clinic workers who swore out affidavits and testified to a medical board that this particular abortionist was killing babies that were born alive. And unfortunately, that medical board in Texas did not prosecute him. And so so far, he's gotten off scot-free. We're still trying to get criminal charges against him, but the publicity surrounding that case as well has led to an increased awareness around the country of abortion abuses. And it's also led to additional laws being passed about clinic regulation. So all of that helps to hold abortion clinics accountable, and the ones, like I said, that can't or won't comply with the law, they're forced to close, and that makes actually the world a safer place.
Absolutely. Another reason you cite is the retirement of aging abortionists. You really see this as a trend, Cheryl, around the country?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Younger abortionists, well, there aren't a lot of younger abortionists, but abortionists are aging, and as they age, they're not being replaced at the same rate with younger men and women who decide they want to go into the abortion business. There are a few. There's actually a program in San Francisco that trains abortionists. There's a number of other training facilities around the country, including in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they're trying to encourage younger doctors to become abortionists. And they're trying to train them. But a lot of new medical students refuse to be trained for abortions. They don't want to go into that business. They understand the stigma. They get into medicine because they want to save lives and heal people, not to destroy innocent life. And everybody's acutely aware of the stigma that surrounds abortionists in the abortion industry. So there are just fewer abortionists in the country today because of that. And the numbers dropping, every year.
Well, that's very interesting and hopeful, I think, for the future, because they're going to keep aging, and hopefully that trend will continue and more clinics will shut down because of it. The last reason that I have, at least on my list, is that there's a greater incidence of documentation and the reporting of abortion abuses by pro-life activists. So would this be, Cheryl, folks that stand outside of abortion clinics and try to engage with women coming and going?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we actually work with kind of a loose network of people. In fact, sidewalk counselors notify us frequently when they see an ambulance at their abortion clinic or see some other indication of wrongdoing. They call us. We encourage them. We encourage everyone that goes out and ministers at abortion clinics, whether you're just there to pray or you're there to offer help to women or for whatever reason, that you go there, that you carry a camera, because you never know when something's going to happen. If we have a picture of the incident or video of the incident, that can really go a long way in exposing what's going on at these abortion clinics. And then another thing that we've been doing, and that we know that this is something that other organizations are kind of copying now, when we find out about these incidents, we file open records requests for the 911 records. And from those 911 records, we're able to find out exactly what happened. For example, in Albuquerque, one of our associates there received over a dozen 911 documents related to Southwestern Women's Options, which is the largest late-term abortion clinic in the United States. And we were able to file complaints with the medical board and get charges against one of the abortionists. Unfortunately, we're not exactly sure why the board charged her and prosecuted her, but then the board turned around and dismissed all the charges. We still think that there was something sneaky going on about that, because it didn't make sense to us that they would go to that extent. But the point is because we got those 911 records, we were able to find out about a horrifically botched 35-week abortion that almost killed a woman.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were able to get a prosecution against that abortionist. And believe me, they have changed their policies over there now. They're doing everything they can to hide medical emergencies now. In fact, the city now denies us 911 records because of the effectiveness of those ones that we were able to get early on. So you just can't really underemphasize how important it is to get the documentation of what's going on at those abortion clinics, snap your pictures, then follow up with open records requests. And that can help us actually prosecute abortionists and close abortion clinics. There's an increase of that around the country, an increased awareness amongst pro-life activists outside of the clinics. And that has helped us a lot in exposing these abuses and bringing pressure to bear, bringing enforcement to bear, and prompting new laws to be passed that close abortion clinics. So all those things working together have dramatically lowered the number of abortions over the last couple of years, and we don't really see any end in sight to that. We expect that trend to continue.
Well, amen. I do hope that that is absolutely the truth. It sounds, Cheryl, like technology has really helped the pro-life movement. You know, we started off talking about ultrasound and how that's helped more young people affiliate pro-life. And then we ended with talking about how just having your camera out at an abortion clinic or your phone to take a video or a picture can really make all the difference in catching these acts when they happen, when something goes awry, and then leading to perhaps a closing of an abortion mill. So very encouraging. And I'm so glad that Operation Rescue is doing the work that you do to help those activists and just people that care about women and babies to be able to put their passion into action. And this is such good news. 44 abortion clinics closed this year alone. That's up 20 from last year. And many good reasons why. Cheryl, it's been encouraging to speak to you today. Thank you for the work you're doing at Operation Rescue and also for joining us.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
On Monday, October 14th, representatives from Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life held a press conference to announce 487 complaints filed against the Fort Wayne abortionist, Dr. Ulrich Klopfer of Crete, Illinois. Each complaint is the result of a termination of pregnancy report containing errors or omissions by Klopfer. Complaints are being filed with the Indiana Attorney General's Office. The complaints address more than 3,100 errors and omissions uncovered on publicly available terminated pregnancy reports spanning abortions performed July 2011 through June 2013. Indiana law requires abortion doctors to file terminated pregnancy reports with the Indiana State Department of Health for each abortion performed. Indiana law also specifies that failure to complete and submit the report on time carries a Class B misdemeanor charge. Okay, Kathy, I remember hearing about this. First, that we got press releases that this was going to happen, this press conference or whatever.
Yes.
And then it happened as of this recording. It was the beginning of the week.
Exactly. We certainly take these kinds of errors and omissions very seriously and just very appreciative of the opportunity to bring this to the attention of the public.
Now, how did you find out about all these errors and omissions and everything?
Well, on a routine basis, we request the copies of the terminated pregnancy reports that the abortionist, as you referred to earlier, has to complete by law. He's required to complete for every little boy and girl that he rips apart limb from limb and discards with surgical waste. So we routinely get copies of these reports, and obviously identifying information is redacted, the name of the patient, the age of the patient's address, that kind of thing. But there's an abundance of information that's on that report that is public information. So the reporting period ends June 30th and December 31st for the abortionist. And then 30 days after the end of the reporting period, we can request copies. We do that on a routine basis, as I said, and then we review them to see if there's anything that needs follow-up, and we take action when necessary, and this is one of those cases.
And this is important because, frankly, the abortion industry is filled with secrecy.
Exactly.
What kinds of errors and omissions are we talking about here?
Well, there were a variety of errors and omissions. Some of the errors included the address of the abortion facility being listed as the address where the abortionist hasn't operated in 7 years over on Webster Street.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Almost every report except those from 2011 included the incorrect address. Also, almost every report included the reported gestational age of the baby from the time of conception as 88 weeks. We did a little research and we found that an elephant can develop in 88 weeks. a full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks. So 88 weeks is just an outside the realm of possibility, incorrect number to put in that particular part of the report. So I don't know why it said 88 weeks on all of them. I don't know if it was a clerical error. I don't know if it was an attempt to claim a clerical error to cover up late-term abortions, if someone were doing abortions beyond the time that they were licensed to do them. they could put 88 weeks on all their reports and just say, yeah, oh, we made a mistake. So those are some of the errors that we're looking at. We also had some simple things like the county being left blank. We would have the fact recorded that the mother had had previous abortions, and then the abortionist has to record the dates of those abortions, and the dates were left missing. So it's just all over the board. I don't know why. And some may make the argument that this information isn't really important, but if it isn't important, then let's not bother to collect it.
Yeah. Have you been accused of nitpicking on some of these, or what, well, what are some of the reasons that is so
very
important?
Hard to make the claim of nitpicking when we're talking about in excess of 3,000 errors on these reports that spanned 18 months. And again, if this information isn't important, and it is nitpicking to say that the baby that was aborted was 88 weeks gestational age, then let's do something about superfluous reporting. But if there's something more egregious going on, we see this as a huge red flag. This is the public information. We want to bring this to the attention of the authorities so that they can look behind closed doors and see if sloppy reporting, if it is that, indicates a sloppy operation.
Or possibly additional cover-up. Besides the complaints that you're referring to, have any other complaints been filed?
Yes, I have personally filed two complaints earlier this year against the same abortion provider for what is certainly more egregious than some of the errors we've been talking about. One was a 13-year-old girl that he performed an abortion on in Lake County. The Indiana law requires that he report that within 3 days to the Child Protective Services and the Indiana Department of Health, because any young girl under the age of 14 is considered incapable of giving consent to a sexual act. So this is child sexual abuse. The urgency for the abortionist reporting this, of course, is so that the perpetrator can be located and face the proper penalties.
Yeah, the clock is ticking in
exactly.
These cases.
So we had a case in Lake County, and we also had a case here in Allen County, and I filed complaints against this doctor with the Attorney General on both those.
Wow. So you're probably not very popular with Dr. Klopfer.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, on one of the TV stations, the local TV stations in Fort Wayne, he said himself that he accused Allen County Right to Life of falsifying the reports.
Okay, you got these from public records, didn't you?
Exactly. A source that's available to anyone. He claims that we could have used some method to adjust the information that he reported. But let me assure you that that did not happen. The reports that we received are the same ones that we reviewed and are the same ones that we completed consumer complaint forms for, and the same ones that have been submitted to the Attorney General for investigation.
Now, a lot of TV stations and such covered your press conference at the beginning of the week, didn't they?
Yes, we were very pleased with the concern that the local media has with this kind of situation. We had very good coverage. Fair coverage, and the reporters asked some very good questions. Mm.
So you brought all this to public light, so to speak.
Yes.
What action are you requesting then be done, and by whom?
Let me say that we had 17 complainants on this last round. I didn't file all the complaints myself. There were various women of all ages and races and ethnicity who are concerned about this. So there were 17 of us that completed reports. Each one of us asked the Attorney General for an immediate suspension of the abortion provider's license pending a full investigation. And we would also like to see, whatever the result, whatever the answer is, that those that are accountable for completing these reports are held accountable by those agencies that are given that authority to do so.
Is there any additional outcome that you're looking for in this?
Well, we want to make certain that the laws that are passed by the Indiana legislature are in fact monitored, and that the people that are not just the abortionists, but all those who fall under the purview of laws that are passed by the legislature are held accountable, and agencies that have that responsibility do so. If we're going to pass laws and not follow up on them, and there's going to be no ramifications for not following the law, there's really not much point in passing the law in the first place. So we just want to see justice done. We want to see the abortionist and his business be held at the same level of competence and responsibility as any other business, because the things that we're concerned about obviously directly impact women's health. So we're concerned about making sure that women get the best care possible. Of course, we would prefer that they hadn't chosen an abortion, that they'd come to us so that we could give them help during their crisis. But should they choose an abortion, we want to make sure that they're not further injured. And we want them to know that we're there for them after the abortion to help them work through the results of any adverse outcomes that they have.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about abortion practices being held to the same standards as other practices. And,
yes,
you know, with the abortion clinics closing across the country as these types of regulations
are enforced,
it kind of shows that, you know, the abortion business, when they're held to the same standard as others, a lot of times they can't function.
Exactly.
You know, there's something wrong there.
Exactly. And you may remember a complaint that I filed with the Department of Justice as a result of the fact that the abortionist does not have a wheelchair ramp.
Oh, yeah.
And that was dismissed by the Department of Justice. I was not very surprised by their response. But what we're having is women having invasive medical procedures and then stumbling down the steps across the parking lot to their cars when they should be in a wheelchair, at the very least, being assisted to their car. I see this routinely because my office is right next door to the abortion facility.
So I trust that we will keep monitoring this situation and let our listeners know of additional updates.
Indeed, not only this situation, but we pledge to continue reviewing all rules and regulations that apply to the abortionist and make certain that not only is he held accountable, but the agencies that are responsible for oversight are held accountable as well.
Okay, so if people want more information, they of course can listen to this program. Are there websites they can go to?
Yes, please go to our website, ichooselife.org, ichooselife.org. Or you can email us, you can email me at Kathy, C-A-T-H-I-E dot Humbarger, H-U-M-B-A-R-G-E-R at ichooselife.org, so that we can add you to our emailing list. And as these situations develop, then you will receive in your email box an update and any further information regarding this and other pro-life concerns and events and news that you might be very interested in.
If you or someone you know is in a crisis pregnancy, help is just a phone call away. Call 877-791-5475. If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a place where free and confidential services are available. 877-791-5475.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.